It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Well, here we go. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. This Money Matters, only an hour today from 9 to 10. So we're just going to get right into it. At 10 o'clock, of course, we have the Bulldog Brunch coming. Bulldogs coming off a huge, just a complete wipeout first game of the year. I know Bulldog Nation is excited. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. We're excited to have Bulldog Brunch. Follow us right after right in the 10 o'clock hour. And we're going to just get right to it because we have good week for this past week, up 3% for the Dow, up 2.79% for the S&P 500. And here we are, though, in what I would look at as a recipe that's kind of a tough spot for investors, because as volatile and bad the month of August was, here we've had this little rebound. Let's go back and look what the month of August actually did. A one-month chart shows us that for the S&P 500, and we're just going to look for the month of August, we were net negative by about 2%. So yes, we had a huge week this week, up almost 3%. So we would have been down almost 5% for the month of August. And we had several days where we were down 2% or even 3% for the S&P 500 and the Dow. And I'm going to talk about how massive those percentages are here. And I want us to try to wrap our arms around just a typical day of volatility. Remember, the S&P 500 market cap is $25 trillion. What's 1% of $25 trillion? Do some math. You have to double check this. It's $250 billion. So 2%, a 2% move is $500 billion is a 2% move. And of course, 3% move would be $750 billion. And that happens in the course of a day. In the course of a day, we get that much movement from the whims of whether the president tweets something positive about doing a deal with China, or Beijing says something positive or negative that, hey, we are not ready to do a deal, or hey, we would like to approach this with calm. Like they said this week, markets go up just because of a few words coming from either side when it comes to trade with China. We see swings in a given day because our market is now so enormous. The swings that we see in a given day are larger than most entire nations' gross domestic product. In a given day, we'll see a 1% move. We'll see a $250 billion swing for the value of stocks. That's the entire GDP, or almost the entire GDP of Singapore. A couple of weeks ago, we had a 3% down move. A 3% down move is $750 billion lost in the entire value of the U.S. stock market. Well, you'd have to take the entire GDP of Norway and add that to the entire GDP of, let's call it, Ireland. And that's what was lost in a given day here just in the United States of America. That is how massive our market is here. And that's how much just a little bit of movement creates this just enormous amount of value gained or lost. But if you start looking into that and say, well, wait a minute, is that a real value change? Yes, it is on paper, but there's a huge disconnect between just how massive these moves are in any given day and what's really happening underneath the surface. I want to get to that here today on the show. Calls the shock of large numbers. Enter in the quandary that investors are in. Hey, Wes, we're only a few percentage points off the all-time high, but we're also in a period of time of great uncertainty, and investors are nervous. If you go and look at where we stand today, S&P 500 is only down about 3.5% from its all-time high. So you say to yourself, well, is this a good time to invest? The market's already very close to a high, so do we put money to work in this environment? Add in all the uncertainty about, hey, that's a global economic slowdown. The Fed here in the United States having to lower interest rates because they're worried that the rest of the global slowdown will show up here in the United States. The bond market, we just traded this week with the lowest 30-year bond yield of all time in the history of the world. Never seen interest rates on a 30-year government bond in the United States get this low. When interest rates go low, it starts to say that the bond market is saying, hey, are we about to slow down economically? Are they sniffing out a recession? Then you enter in President Trump versus President Xi, the United States versus let's remind ourselves that a communist China versus a completely democratic and capitalist United States are in this face-off against trade. The two world's largest economies. And by the way, we're talking about democracy and free market capitalism relative to or versus what we have to remember or remind ourselves, China is a communist nation. Any given day, a tweet about this relationship moves markets 1, 2, 3%. Here we are off 3.5% of all-time highs. And you say to yourself, if I'm an investor, do I want to put a new dollar to work or not? Do I want to sit on the sidelines or not? What are the statistics behind getting invested in a where we are today, near an all-time high? Well, my good friends over at the what used to be the Union Bank of Switzerland, UBS, in my very early career in Atlanta, I spent many years. I still have a lot of good friends over at UBS, and this is research that came from UBS, and they looked at S&P 500 data since 1945, looking at what happened. So, by the way, about a third of the time in the history of markets, going all the way back to 1945, when you were about to get invested, so one out of three periods of time, we were right at or trading, floating around an all-time high. So the question is, if I get into a market at an all-time high, investing, I'm buying essentially, not buying low, not buying in the middle of a dip, not buying in the middle of a recession, but buying in relatively at the top, what were the investors' odds of actually having a positive outcome, making money? Counterintuitively here, you don't want to buy at a market top, right? Well, let's look at the statistics. And here are, by the way, what this study does all the way back from 1945. Investments, getting invested in markets that are right at an all-time high actually did better. They actually did better. Investors had a better outcome than if you were to look at a purely random entry point over the course of that same history. About a third of the time, or more than a third of the time, when you're buying in at all-time high, remember, I'm going back to 1945 until last year, 2018, an investor at no point moving forward would have seen their investment trade in the red. Meaning that whatever you started with, at some point when the market finally came back down or dipped 5 or 10 or 15%, you were still in the green relative to where you started. That's a third of the time. In almost 60% of cases, 60% of the time, the investor that would have gotten in at an all-time high would at no point ever suffered more than a 5% drawdown. So 60% of the time, getting invested when markets were at a, quote, high, all right, so we're talking about almost two-thirds of the time, the worst you've ever had to stomach, this investor base, was a 5% drawdown. Pretty remarkable statistics. And then this last piece of the equation, in only 15% of the time, only 15% of instances would an investor have suffered a full-on bear market of down 20%. From their initial amount of money. So read it another way. 85% of the time getting invested at an all-time high, you never saw a full 20% decline in stocks. 85% of the time, you never ended up experiencing a 20% loss relative to what you started with if you put money to work at an all-time high. And again, I've been doing this for 20-some years, and looking at the data here, still kind of shocks me. If you really look at it this way, it's a real study on, yes, even though markets are trading at a high level and you as an investor say, I don't know if I want to get started at this level, the odds are very much in your favor that you're still going to make money in the S&P 500. Now we think about, well, wait a minute, what if I invested in call it October or September of 2007, right before the bottom fell out? Yeah, that would have been terrible, right? You would have experienced a full bear market. If I would have invested right at the year 2000, right before the dot-com crash, which would be, remember, March of 2000, NASDAQ 5000, yes, that would have been a disastrous time to do that. But those are two examples, and they are almost tattooed on our brains as investors. You do not want that. That's the last thing we want. But what about going back and you're saying, well, if I invested in 2016 near a high, well, I would have actually done pretty well. Or how about 1995? Or how about 2013? Or how about 1992? Or how about 1982? Those are all periods of time where you got invested when the market was already doing well, near a high or at a high, and then you still did well, and you still did very well over time. That's the quandary that we all face, and we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't know if the trade war gets better, gets worse. My opinion here is that we've dug in, and this is now is more than just trade. I think that this is a referendum about our way of life in America and democracy and free market capitalism versus a very different system in China that is, let's remember, it's communist. And week after week, what we're seeing with the protesters in Hong Kong and how the Chinese are handling those protesters, now arresting people for being pro-democracy, they're reminding the world right now, right in front of our eyes, that they're running a very different game over there in China. You see a couple billionaires come out of China. Jack Ma from Alibaba, he's an entrepreneur in China. We celebrate entrepreneurs. Now he's a billionaire. I think they choose who they want the world to see. And then the other couple billion people are under a regime that is very different than what's happening here in the United States. So we have to remember that. I do think the president wants to get some sort of deal done before the election next year, but it might not be tomorrow. And we're going to continue to see volatility be heavy right here in the face of all of that. We've got to remember what history, though, is on our side when it comes to investing in markets, investing with equity, particularly when you have time. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters, a little history lesson on markets that I found fascinating this week. The number here in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750 or 1-800-WSB-TALK. You're listening to Money Matters right here on 95.5 WSB.
The WSB News and Traffic Teams will keep you updated all weekend here on 95.5 WSB. This is Scott Slade, host of Atlanta's Morning News. Listen first thing tomorrow morning, too, for those all-important news, weather, and traffic updates. Now back to Wes Moss and WSB Money Matters.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Let's talk about automation for a minute, which has always been a scary word to me when it comes to, I can't stand the idea of a robot taking a human job. Who wants that? In fact, we talked a couple of years ago how some of these big technology companies were going to come under fire in the next election. That's, by the way, exactly what's happening. You're going to continue. It's bipartisan support to try to fight back against these monopolies that are not only taking small businesses out of the equation, they're taking jobs out of the equation. But in some cases here, automation of our jobs, again, sounds scary and awful, but it might actually be a blessing. And I'm going to turn your attention to the Panera Bread Company. We all know Panera. Call that fast casual food. They lose 100% of their workers in a given year. Their turnover is 100%. And then fast food chains, the average turnover, can easily be 130%. In some cases, 150% turnover. McDonald's spends $1 billion a year ordering something to automate that. $1 billion a year ordering kiosks. Now, if you talk to somebody in the fast food industry, it is they look at this now as a turnover crisis. Restaurant industry turnover 130%. That means that you're turning over more than the entire workforce in any given year. The entire workforce in any given year, and the whole industry or the sector, and this is not just fast food, but the entire restaurant industry, it's over 80% in any given year. And a lot of chains will be 150%. So you're having to, if you have 100 people working for you, you've got a full 100 people that you have to rehire in that given year, and then another 50 to get 150% turnover. And that's how tough it is if you're managing, you own one of these restaurants. So I was in a McDonald's driving up to Michigan the other day, and there was this kiosk that said, hey, this is where you need to order. Yeah, they still had real humans and real people there, but the kiosk was saying, hey, you put in your order right here, you can pay right here. And I was thinking, oh, this is terrible. Well, I don't know if it's terrible. Nope, nobody wants to work in this industry. There's just the population, the workforce is sending a message that says, hey, this is a particular job that we want to have automated. And then that entire workforce of people can do something else. Maybe it's a higher level job. Maybe it's another job that people actually like or love. So the automation might actually be a blessing as opposed to a curse. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. More straight ahead on 95.5 WSB.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta Mercedes-Benz Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. 35 minutes past the hour. We're going to 10 o'clock today. And then at 10 o'clock, yes, it's a Bulldog Brunch. And we have only an hour here today on the show. For your calls and questions, phone lines are open. I know we don't have a ton of time, but time to take a question or two or three. The number here, 404-872-0750. That's right. Good morning. 404-872-0750. Ryan Ely is here, just standing by to take your call and question and then pass it through and we'll chat here on a Sunday morning. You could also call 1-800-WSB-TALK, 800-972-8255. You're headed to from home to church to maybe work, maybe not work on here this Labor Day weekend, but we're here in the studio live and always happy to take your calls and your questions and what we love to do. So again, number here in the studio, 404-872-0750-800-WSB-TALK, which is 800-972-8255. And, you know, I think through everything that I learned or read this week, and it's just a deluge, of course, of information that I'm hit with, you're hit with. And I've always got to figure out, you know, what bubbles are the top that we're going to talk about on Money Matters? What's the most interesting part of the equation? What's the most helpful? What's a helpful piece of information to understand about the economic landscape we live in? That's what I try to do on Sundays. And let me start by discussing what is not necessarily helpful. We're healthy to focus on, and that's the daily winds of change. When it comes to trade relations, we're going to at some point find a resolution to trade. It will happen. Now, it might not be this wonderful trade deal, and now all of a sudden China says, okay, well, we're going to act like a free market economy. That's probably not going to be the outcome. What is also not going to be the outcome is we say, you know what, forget China. We're not even going to trade with you, and they say, forget you guys. We're just going to trade with anybody else but you. So that's probably not going to happen either. What'll happen will be something in between those two outcomes, something in the middle. But until we get there, we're just going to continue to see wild market swings every time either side talks. So single tweet from the president moves the entire stock market by 1 or 2 or 3% in a given day. Any given day, imagine 2 or 3%, the entire value of the S&P 500, total value, by the way, and this is the shock of large numbers that is important to understand. The where we stand today, total market cap of the S&P 500 is right just at $24.7 trillion. So let's call it $25 trillion. By the way, it was less than $8 trillion in 2009. Go back to 2009 when the market had fallen and fallen and fallen. $8 trillion. Today worth $25 trillion. So every 1% tweet move, 1% up, down, $250 billion of value in a day, a couple hours of trading. Any given day when the market falls 3%, and that happened, it's happened a couple times in this tough August. So we finished up almost 3% on the week, but we still finished down almost 2% for the month of August. It was a rough month. And several days, we saw a full 3%, full 3% in this market. So in a single day, a couple hours, that's $500 billion, so half a trillion dollars in movement, $750 billion, a 3% move. either the value created or destroyed in a single day. Let's put it into context, though. Let's think about these large numbers. $250 billion is 2 to 3 times the net worth of the very richest person on the globe or in the United States. Let's do some more math. $500 billion, that's a 2% market move, happens all the time. That's the amount of money that it would take if you looked at median income in the United States. That's as much money as 9 million families, 9 million families in America make in aggregate for an entire year. Just a daily move in the market. Think about this. So one $500 billion move, that's the GDP of a country like Norway or Ireland or Austria or Belgium or Sweden. Just one $500 billion move. The entire GDP of the state of Georgia, $600 billion. That's our entire economy in the state of Georgia in a whole year. And the S&P 500 can do that in a matter of a few hours. So if you think about this or you follow how much manipulation or just change, it's not manipulated. It's just the fact that it moves up or down in any given day, single day. Our companies, remember, the stock market is just this odometer for the value of companies. So do companies really gain $250 billion of value on a Thursday relative to the Wednesday before? Are companies really worth $250 billion less on any given Wednesday versus the day before on a Tuesday? So the numbers are so vast and they have such an order of magnitude relative to how little things are actually changing, yet we see these massive swings in values. Companies can lose $250 billion in a single day when, in fact, guess what? Nothing at all changed. Nothing. Except just a tiny little sentiment. Nothing to do with the value of those companies. Yet we see $500 billion worth of value either created or stored in a single day. That's it. Nothing at all except where the odometer stands. And when it goes in the wrong direction or the direction that hurts us, the negative, down 2%, down 3%, which is the difficult part of investing. We have to remember that those swings lower, and sometimes this will last more than, certainly it'll be weeks and months and even years when we go through these periods of time. I think what I wanted to remind us today of this, the swings down can be terrible, but they're temporary. Terrible, but temporary declines. And I bring this up just to remind us how fleeting any given hour or day or week or even month is when it comes to the value of markets and, quite frankly, the value of your 401k. I mean, you look at it, you say, I know that people check the value of their investments, and they should. But if the more you check, the more difficult it becomes in any given hour of any given day. The reality is that the only way to look at investing and look at creating substantial wealth over is through years and decades of being patient and investing in companies and in a system that will continue to inch the ball forward every day of the week. That's investing. And the greatest investors understand that. And we think about during the 1987 crash, biggest single day loss we've seen. 1987, Warren Buffett lost $350 million in a day. That was his stake of Berkshire. During the Asian financial crisis, or let's go back to 1998, July to August of 1998, Buffett lost, this is called a month and a half, over $6 billion during the Great Recession, the bear market of 07 through 09. His net worth dropped by over $20 billion. By the way, I pull up Berkshire Hathaway here today. You go back to 2009. A share of Berkshire traded at $75,000 a share. Today, it trades at over $300,000 a share. Through thick and thin, through all the changes we've seen in this economy, Buffett kind of held on and held on and held on. Now, you may well say, and there was a time doing Money Matters that I didn't do examples of Warren Buffett, because you may be saying to the radio, good morning, by the way, it's a billionaire, and I'm not a billionaire, and that's a ridiculous example, Wes. Why would you compare what we do in my 401k that's $100,000? Why are you comparing that to Warren Buffett? Stop doing those comparisons. And I used to think of it that way. What am I really going to learn from Warren Buffett? He's such in another league that can I really learn from Buffett? But the longer I've invested over the years, the more I realize, listen, if I have $10 billion and it dropped to, and this is what you may be saying about the billionaire example, hey, if I had $10 billion and it dropped to $5 billion, I'd be fine too, Wes. But the lesson really does apply to us all. $200,000 in a 401k drops to $150,000. That's a big deal. That's painful to you. But to really accumulate wealth, you got to understand that these terrible losses, they're temporary. Terrible, but temporary. And the billion-dollar Buffett example, it does apply to all of us. What do? We have to take away a couple of zeros, and then the math is the same. Where we differ mostly as investors, from investor A, who's at the top of the class, to investor B, who's at the bottom, where we differ the most as investors is how we control our emotions about the money. Our emotions dictate our propensity to either hold tight and or jump out. Our emotions dictate our propensity to either see the future with pessimism or see the future with optimism. And if we can do that, then we can stay invested so that when great returns do come and we get to another point when markets make new ground, we're there to capture them. We've got to be there to capture those gains. And that's why I thought starting today's show with these statistics about entering into the market at an all-time high, it's important to understand. And if you missed part of that, effectively the research shows that, yes, we're taught and what we want to do is buy low and sell high, buy low. However, counterintuitively, by buying into markets at all-time highs, so the reverse, buying high, in most cases, you still make a lot of money in the S&P 500. In many cases, you end up not even having any time when you trade in the red. You've got almost 60% of the time. You never lose more than 5% at any given time. And then 85% of the time, you avoid 20% losses. And that's investing at all-time high. So a lot of this has to do with our perception about how bad things can get versus the reality of how they end up. This trade war is a good example. The world, many days here, acts as though the world's about to end. Here we are. If you woke up and let's say you just read the newspaper for the last 6 months and somebody asked you, hey, what do you think the stock market's done this year? I think most people would say we're probably down 15 or 20%. We're down 15 or 20%, right? It's been a terrible year. We're in the middle of a trade war. Where are we for the year? S&P 500 up 16% year to date. Still up 16% year to date. And it's investors that have been able to stomach this and deal with this. Those are the ones that get rewarded. And investors have been rewarded for this. And that is investing. Now, there's also this constant drumbeat about income and wealth inequality. There's an article in the Wall Street Journal this week that shows that the decade-long economic expansion that has showered the United States with wealth has passed most people by. Oh, has it? Households in the bottom half, as measured by wealth, have only recently regained what they lost in the 2007-2009 recession. Compared with 2003, they're down 32% adjusted for inflation, while the top 1%, it's always against the top 1%, are up more than 100%. And it's all about skewed wealth distribution. It's common around the world, but in the USA, inequality has grown faster than income inequality in the past decade, making the current wealth gap a record. So you should feel bad because you've been an investor and captured these market gains. We don't need to feel bad. We've been able to do this, and Americans are investors, and those who have really made this work over the past 10 years are the ones that stuck with it and the ones that believed in this economy and believed in markets, believed in companies, believed in earnings, and participated. And I've seen people build huge fortunes that are not that don't have multi-million dollar incomes, people that make $50,000, $60,000 a year, husband, wife, maybe they both work, and they still get to the point where they have $1 million or $1.5 million or $2 million because they're disciplined, they're patient, and they've done this for a very long time. So don't let these articles make you feel guilty about the system that we're in. The system that we're in is here for the taking. The system we're in is full free market capitalism, very different than the reminders we're getting out of China, who are now starting to throw people in jail who are, quote, pro-democracy. That is the economic adversary that we're trying to strike a trade deal with. No wonder it's not going well. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here till the 10 o'clock hour. Then we have Bulldog Brunch. It's college football season. How exciting is that? Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead.
This is Scott Slade. Hope you'll join me first thing tomorrow morning for Atlanta's Morning News on 95.5 WSB. Wes Moss is there, Kirk Mellish, and Triple Team Traffic every 6 minutes. Now, here's more from Wes and Money Matters on 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. Have you picked up a copy of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution? Today in the business section on the front page, you're going to see an article titled something to the effect, "It's never too late to save for retirement." Now, I say some of the fact that sometimes the online title may be different than the print, but that's what the print look. That's what the online title is today. If you're like most Americans, you probably have a lot of catching up to do. We were just talking about this system that we're in allows us to save money. One in three people in the United States have less than five grand saved up for retirement. One in three people, a third of America, less than $5,000. 21% of Americans have zero retirement savings at all. National Institute of Retirement Security has found that 62% of working households between 55 and 64, so that's that pre-retiree age. That's, hey, we're getting ready to retire, had retirement savings worth less than their annual income. So if you're 63 and your income's 80 grand, it's this study from the National Institute of Retirement says that 62% of that entire group would then in fact have less than $80,000 saved, which means that there's no way you can sustain your level of spending once you hit retirement. The same study reported that the median retirement account balance for households nearing retirement, the median, which is, we need to look at median data, not mean. Mean will have a skewed, positive skew because you've got a few 401k accounts that are in the multi-millions. But the median retirement, $14,500 total. That's it. That's a little scary. Now, the good news is that you can pick up a copy of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Sunday edition, and find this article because it's all about how you catch up from your retirement savings. You can find me and the Money Matters team at wesmoss.com, WESMOSS.com. You know, we post a lot. I've tended to like Instagram, how quick and easy it is. So our Instagram is just Wes Moss Money Matters as well. Wes Moss Money Matters on Instagram or Facebook. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Feel free to email me and the Money Matters team through wesmoss.com throughout the week. Happy to get back to you 24 or 48 hours. Stay tuned to the best program on the planet right here. 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk.